Okay, welcome everybody. Good afternoon. So, Horaim Tovim, thank you very much. This shiur just moved from Jerusalem to New York, to Manhattan. We're now here at Stern College, and you're all invited. We're here Wednesdays. Let's check the sound for a minute. But anyway, we just started this shiur, and many of you asked, well, can we do it in an easier hour, and we will take care of it, Bezrat Hashem, after the Chagim. It will take place during the evenings and not in this hour. I want to show you that although here we're a group of students, people, guests, we have guests from New Jersey here, and Israeli guests, there are a lot of people watching us out there, and I just got a very exciting picture at the end of last shiur, last Wednesday. I got this picture of a guy doing miluim, reserve duty, a soldier in the IDF, sitting watching us from here, live, from the field. It's in Cholot Chalutza, near Gaza Strip. I hope he's at home by now, but anyway, that's just an example. And I know we have English classes in Israel. A lot of English teachers are using this shiur, so that's also an opportunity for me to ask. If there are any English mistakes, you're more than welcome to send all your corrections. I really love to listen, to hear, and to learn. This week's parsha is Ki Tetzeh. By the way, speaking of Hebrew, English, Ivris, the mixture of these two languages and how hard it is sometimes to translate, I just want you to see this page from Wikipedia. Look at this. When I wanted to type the name of the parsha, Ki Tetzeh, look at all the versions you have. That's Kitetz 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different ways to write just 5 simple letters in Hebrew. It's Kitetzeh, that's all. But we're trying to choose like the mainstream options when we translate different words. And I really think today it's not an ordinary shiur because this class is taking place in Manhattan. We're in the middle of Manhattan on September 11th. And 18 years ago, I think the hardest terrorist attack in history occurred at the Twin Towers World Trade Center. So of course we dedicated this class to the memory of the thousands who perished, all the heroes who saved so many lives, and of course the wounded and everyone else who was impacted by this tragedy. Also a few announcements, people also asked to dedicate the shiur le'ilui nishmat, to the elevation of the soul of Chava Bat Chaya Gittel, a Holocaust survivor who passed away in Israel. Her daughter Ronit Luz is watching us from there. Also Chaim, he's watching us from Beit Shemesh, asked to dedicate the shiur the memory of his grandmother, Ida Fortuna Bat Koka Boznach, that passed away this week. And we are also saying Mazal Tov to Eden Levy, who started Shlichut from the Jewish agency, sent her here to America. I don't know where exactly is she watching us, but Mazal Tov from all your friends. And now please, let's start, because for me as an Israeli, we know we have experienced horrible terrorist attacks of our own, but from far away, really, we watched the American nation, the American people coping with this tragedy, and really, for the first time, maybe understanding what radical Islam can cause and how it is really our common enemy. And now, in Manhattan, in this special day, we're reading together the first passage in this week's Torah portion, Ki Tetzeh. And the first commandment, the first thing that Parsha tells us is, Ki Tetzeh l'milchama al oyvecha, u'netano Hashem elokecha b'yadecha v'shavita shivyo. If you go out to war against your enemies. And of course, many, many commentators tell us, this is not a description of an ancient war somewhere in the desert, on the way towards Israel 3,000-4,000 years ago. The war is happening right here, right now. Ki tetzeh l'milchama al oyvecha means we always have a war. There's always a combat. Cultural war, the war of civilization, and a physical war with terror. And there's another sentence at the end of this parsha, also very, very relevant. Zachor et asher asa lecha Amalek b'derech b'etzetchem Mitzrayim. Always remember what the ultimate evil tried to do, and never forget. I do think here people do not forget what happened 18 years ago exactly. I just saw a fascinating survey done here in America. And the American people were asked, that was the question, please name 10 historic events that occurred in your lifetime that you think have had the greatest impact on the country. Now you can see different ages, different types of people, you know. The millennials, number one event for them, the event is September 11, 86%. Generation X, September 11, 79%. Baby boomers, last century, 70%. And even what we call the silent generation, the beginning of last century, that when they were born, they also choose the majority, 59%, September 11. Now, number two is different. The older people chose World War II, other people, JFK assassination, of course, other people, Obama election. But number one, as you see, is the same. They do not forget what happened. For me, it's the first time here ever in this date. And some neighbor told me yesterday that here, people see it like a biblical event in its dimension. Nearly 3,000 people perished in an instant in the most famous symbols of the West material success of the Western world, while the entire planet is watching it live. Not only here, I was watching it in Israel, international television. There's a promo in one of Israel's radio stations called Galei Tzahal, the IDF radio. For years, they had a promo. There's an anchor there called Yaron Vilensky. He's really like a ragua, you know, calm down, really relaxed anchor. Most of them are not from this type. But he's really ragua. And he was watching that they did it, you know, they chose these seconds to be their promo because it's very special. He was just shouting. He saw what happened to the Twin Towers and he was like, wow, I don't believe it. Wow! Like a game you see and you, like it was, he was shouting in the studio. So for years that was the promo of the station and I remember these moments in Israel too. I want to quote like words of wisdom written by Professor Benjamin Blech, yeshiva of Yeshiva University. He wrote on September 11, what should be our common lesson. And he says, what we have learned is that we are engaged in a conflict rooted not in this desire for more land, right? That's not the occupation going on there. Not in a desire for more land, for more wealth, for more power, but a war that is meant to decide between two visions. The difference between you and us, Osama bin Laden famously said, is that you glorify life and we glorify death. There cannot be a better definition, a better summary of what is at stake in this battle. To call our enemies just terrorists is to diminish the scope of their evil intentions. And today we recognize that we're fighting for is nothing less than the survival of civilization, our civilization. And our goal must therefore be the biblical mandate we have been given from Hashem in the Torah, to choose life. And it's very interesting because these awful terrorists, cruel, awful terrorists, they were motivated, they were like religious people, right? They were really into it. But maybe the message here is that religion is a fire, he says, and a fire warms, but it also burns. And we are the guardians for the flame. And what we saw on that sad day, on September 11, we saw the power of distortion, because we saw to what extent a fanatical religious faith can bring about evil and death. But that's, of course, it's the opposite way to understand what religion is, what Hashem is. We must show that faith and devotion at the same level of enthusiasm must bring about goodness and life to the world. When you say about someone, he has self-sacrifice, okay? You mean, oh, he's like fanatic someone, he will kill someone. No, he will, being like, in Hebrew, there's a word, kanai, like a zealot, right? Can you be a zealot for life, for good, for chesed, for Torah, for real faith? Or can you be a zealot just when it means killing someone and harming them? So that's maybe one of the main messages of this special day. But of course, the war is not merely a physical conflict. And many, many commentators emphasize that we do not read this Parsha during the month of Elul by chance. We see it all the time during the book of Dvarim, the fifth Chumash. We see all the time that these are essential messages for Elul and for the upcoming New Year. And the real war, Ki Tetzel HaMilchama, is not only this physical war. It's very, very easy to stay in this level because it means we do not have to do anything. Of course, we support the US, we support Israel, we support democracy, we support human rights, we support Jewish values. Of course, that's not so hard to go back home with a lot of satisfactions. We're in the right side of history and they are completely wrong, they're ultimate evil. That would be perfect. The Lubavitcher Rebbe warned us in this Parsha of Elul, do not stay only in this level of, okay, this is the, if that's the war, I'm in the right side, so goodbye. I'm going to pick something and eat something in the cafeteria because I do not have any homework. He really emphasized every Elul to look at the real war. What is the real war? The commentators again explain it again and again. Of course, it's the war against our inside, like evil inclination, Yetzer Hara. And the Parsha talks about the physical battle. But take a look, for example, that's a story taken from a book called Chovat HaLevavot, The Duties of the Heart, Chovat HaLevavot, written 1,000 years ago by Rabbeinu Bechaye Ibn Pakuda. And in this book, Chovat HaLevavot, it's a famous story, it is quoted, I think, everywhere, and he tells us about a certain chassid, a certain person, who saw soldiers walking happily along while beating drums since they just came back from a war with a neighboring country. And the chassid addressed them with these words. He said, why are you so happy? Yes, you won the war, but the big war is still ahead. And they said, what do you mean? We just fought the hardest war we had. Let us sing. And he said, no. Every war in the world is considered small in comparison to the war against the evil inclination, since it is the biggest war in our lives. It is a constant, sophisticated war without end, never. And it's a fight against our undesirable qualities, our unrefined speech, our improper thoughts and actions. And by the way, we know, I guess you know it here in the States too, but military generals were, you know, admired and glorified, and they were leading like huge armies. They can fall in the biggest war. I do not want to quote and give examples, but we know that occupying ourselves, it's really hard. And really, many, many commentators talk about the deepest war that we should all fight. Do not be satisfied with only seeing the global war out there. Look at the inner war in us. I do want to move on because that's just the beginning. That's the first pasuk of the parasha. But after this main headline, Ki Tetzel HaMilchama, when you go on out to a war against your enemies, I want to dive a little bit, like a little deeper, but it is hard. There are no less than 74 different mitzvot in this parsha, and more mitzvot than in any other Torah portion we read, okay? 74 out of 613. I mean, that's, I can say 74 weapons in this war. If you want some weapons to win, to start fighting this inner war, you have 74 different weapons. And we see many commentators trying to find like a common denominator or like organizing principles. How do you start even dealing with 74 mitzvot? And we see how Moshe Rabbeinu is really leaving us quite a heritage. These are the last parashot, the last speeches he's giving to us. What we will do, instead of searching for, there are a lot of types of mitzvot that you can understand, that you cannot understand, that they appear for the first time, or Moshe Rabbeinu elaborates. We read it earlier in the Torah, and now he elaborates. We will talk only about two more mitzvot after talking about the first pasuk, Ki Tetzeh. But these mitzvot, I think they belong to a certain type we can call obvious mitzvot, the obvious variety of mitzvot. they really do not get like draw a lot of attention, because typically they really they're like, I don't want to use the word boring where it comes to our Holy Torah. They're almost like banal. In Hebrew, you also say banali. They're familiar. Nobody really look at like the additional depth they have. We don't usually don't treat them. I can speak to myself. I didn't think about these mitzvot. I think I never thought about them. Can think about Shabbat, the Chagim, Tishrei is waiting for us. I can think about a lot of, you know, mitzvot. Maybe that there's a certain conflict today when it comes to, you know, these commandments. I never thought of this mitzvah, for example, Hashavat Aveda. What can you say about it? Go to the kindergarten. My daughter just started kindergarten a few days ago. I'm sure her Mora is teaching her there about Hashavat Aveda. Kids really lost a lot of things in kindergarten, so it's very relevant there. Returning a lost object. It's very nice. It's obvious. What do I have to say about it? Let's see. לא תראה את שור אחיך או את סיו נידחים והתעלמת מהם. השב תשיבם לאחיך וכן תעשה לחמורו וכן תעשה לסמלתו וכן תעשה לכל עבדת אחיך אשר תובד ממנו ומצאתה לא תוכל להתעלם. Let's translate. You shall not see your brother's ox or sheep, כן, שור עושה straying, נידחים, and ignore them. Rather, what should you do? You shall return them to your brother. So shall you do with his donkey, and so shall you do with his garment, and so shall you do with his, with any lost article of your brother, which he has lost and you have found. You shall not ignore it. Once again, I don't want to use the word mistake, but something is wrong. I read the pasuk in Hebrew. I go to all the sites, official sites, in English, and something in the translation is, it's not it. Let's look at the three last words in Hebrew. Lo tuchal leitalem. We have Hebrew speakers here. What is lo tuchal leitalem? That's not the right way to say it. You shall not ignore it. This is ata lo tzarich leitalem, right? And so I went to another site, also official Jewish site. I saw another version. You must not remain indifferent. No. That's also not, I see all the Hebrew speaker here. No, you must not remain indifferent is לא תוכל להישאר אדיש. Or אסור לך להישאר אדיש. There is something very special in these three Hebrew words, לא תוכל להתעלם. And maybe that's the most important part of the shiur, just to make the English speakers here understand what it means when our Torah is telling us לא תוכל להתעלם, אנחנו לא יכולים להתעלם. From these three words, let's not ignore them and explain them in the right way. So maybe Rashi could help us out here. לא תוכל להתעלם, לכבוש עיניך, כאילו אינך רואה אותו. You shall not ignore, meaning by covering one's eyes, pretending not to see it. That might lead us closer to the right translation. לא תוכל להתעלם means you won't be able to ignore. You will be at such a high level that you will just not be able to ignore what you see. לא תוכל להתעלם. Rabbi Michael Yammer is the head of Yeshivat Shalavim in Israel. A lot of Americans come there, at least for a gap year, maybe even more. And Rabbi Yammer, last year, we met him during the month of Elul, and he told my husband, my son, I was also there, he told them, how is he planning to open the yeshiva on the first day of Elul? לא תוכל להתעלם. He showed us the sources he prepared in order to tell all the students in his yeshiva that these three words, as we say usually, we ignore, אנחנו מתעלמים from this mitzvah. But he says that's the most important thing in order to build our, let's say, build our life, build our identity. And he said, why is לא תוכל להתעלם so important? That's what he told us then. Why does it say לא תוכל להתעלם? You will not be able to ignore. It's forbidden to ignore. אסור להתעלם. The Torah doesn't say אסור להתעלם, it's forbidden to ignore. Or it's not written, it's not nice to ignore. No, לא יפה להתעלם. No, but rather, you will not be able to ignore. This is a strange use of language, since obviously, if I want to ignore, I can really ignore. I can really ignore anything. And therefore, the goal here is to educate yourself so that you will simply be incapable of ignoring a lost object. The Torah wants to change us, to change our character by developing like a keen and I would say abiding awareness of this obligation, okay? This thing should transform us in a way. If you find like a donkey, a dog, or a tablet, a cell phone, I don't care, in order to properly develop your personality, you must return it. And it's not easy to do it, okay? You should do it again and again. You should practice this muscle of awareness. But as we say, mitzvah goreret mitzvah, one mitzvah pulls along another one, and eventually you ultimately will be in you will, like at the end of the process, okay, your personality will be developed and you will change. You will be a person shelo yachol leitalem. It will be it will make you different. And of course, he explained, we're not discussing only physical objects. It's not only bringing, as I said, a donkey or a tablet back to the owner. There are spiritual losses too. And Rabbi Yamer showed us a beautiful text written by the holy Or HaChaim. Or HaChaim HaKadosh, that's how we call him in Hebrew, Rabbi Chaim Ben Atar. And the Or HaChaim explains, we have spiritual losses too. Okay? All of us sometimes lose something in the spiritual sense. And it's necessary to understand, okay? Like we have hunger, we have spiritual hunger. And like someone needs something physically, a lot of people need guidance when it comes to spirituality. And look at the beautiful, beautiful Hebrew how Or HaChaim is using, okay? Don't feel bad if you don't understand it. There are a lot of Israelis that do not understand it too. Very high level of Hebrew. Or HaChaim came from Morocco to Israel, like I think 300 years ago approximately. Parashazo, he says. This parasha, parashazo, ba lirmuz bifratut, chiyuv ha-tochachot, שצריכים בני אל חי צדיקים עולם לעשות לעם השם. This paragraph is an allusion to the need for the scholars to admonish the plain people in order for them to become the true people of the Lord. He explains that we should return people back to Hashem. These are the losses. People were lost. And we must bring them back, and we cannot ignore. And Rabbi Yamer also told us back then, if we look at another commentator from Europe 200 years ago, Sfat Emet, one of the founders of Hasidut Gur, from the Hasidut movement, Sfat Emet also says that, what does it mean, lo tuchal italem? Everything that a person sees, he's saying it when he reads this pasuk, everything that a person sees belongs to him and needs to be returned, and by this reflection, reflects on his friends as well. Meaning, כל מה שרואה האדם שייך לו, וצריך לשוב על זה, ועל ידי זה מביא הרהור תשובה גם בחברו. Everything that you see means something. That's a revolutionary concept. You don't just see things and ignore them. You must think, why was I shown this thing? What does it mean to me? What can be derived out of this thing I just saw, okay? What can I do in order to make it meaningful? I just want to share two stories about two people. This week in Israel, I published these stories there. We'll publish them here too. People that could not ignore. They saw something and they found a way of making it meaningful. This guy, his name is Moshe Yeret. He's a bus driver in Israel. And he has a blog called, in Hebrew, Miyomano Shel Nahag Autobus. Yeah, like a diary, a blog of a bus driver in Israel. And he writes a lot of things he sees and hears. And this week, a mother with her girl wanted to pay him, but they had a problem with their like a prepaid card. In Hebrew, it's called Ravkav. Exactly, Ravkav. Yes, miss this Ravkav. So simple, so stupid Ravkav. Anything. Anyway, so they had a problem with their prepaid card, with the Ravkav, so we explained to them that they should get off the bus at the next bus stop, charge the Ravkav, charge the cab cheaply, it's better, and then continue the drive. Instead of, the other option was paying him for a new ticket, which is much, much more expensive, okay, more money. So he explained them how to, what to do. And the mother said, in Hebrew, Toda rabah lecha, be'emet toda rabah, meaning, thank you very much, really, thank you very much. And the little girl, this guy, Moshe Yeret, writes, and the little girl was listening, saying, Mommy, what did he do wrong? And she said, he did nothing wrong, he helped us. So the girl said, why did you say, Toda rabah lecha be'emet toda rabah? You usually say it when someone did something wrong. And he was like, the driver was like, wow, do you understand the meaning of it? Even here, when I shout here at my kids, okay, when I really yell, when I'm really mad, what do? Toda rabah lecha. Thank you very much, really, thank you very much. If someone says it, it's usually, he really means thank you very much. But this little girl, she was 6 or 7 years old, she already understands in our cynical world with so much, you know, sarcasm going on, she understands that if somebody says, Toda rabah, he means, oh, really, thank you very much, yeah, for that, you did nothing. He means to say it in a negative way. What a story, he heard it. We published it together. We have hundreds of people telling us how they thought of what they say to their kids. How do they speak? The kids are listening. What language do we use in order to have more tmimut, to be more honest and simple and less, you know, sophisticated? And how we're approached, how we use our language, and how we teach kids that people who say Toda rabah do not say it in a negative way. But this example, I think, is even better. If we talk about lo leitalem, okay, he heard something, and it was important to him to expose us all to how we use our language in Hebrew and English. But this story, I think, is much more meaningful. Listen to this. Many people in Israel posted this picture this week, and they said, what is it? Is it a Photoshop? Is it a real ad? A real commercial advertisement? What is it exactly? So I started looking for an answer, and I discovered a beautiful, beautiful answer. And here's the story, okay? I interviewed Harav Gad Herman. Rabbi Herman teaches the 12th grade in a yeshiva called Orot HaZorim in the north of Israel, near Moshav HaZorim. Near HaZorim village is in the north, and that's the junction near Moshav HaZorim. So Rabbi Herman says, at the end of last year, there was a big ad on this billboard next to the yeshiva about a new crime serious, with a lot of violence, etc., a new crime serious on cable TV in Israel. It was viewed by all of the people who drove to the yeshiva every day. And in one of my talks, I spoke sorrowfully about the fact that this ad assumes simply that all of us are waiting with anticipation for this series to begin, okay? It was like the phrasing of the ad assumed that it's obvious that this is the kind of culture that everyone consumes and wants. Okay? He even said, Ki hem chayeinu ve'orech yameinu. This is our culture, that's what we want, yomam v'layla. So I told my students, just imagine if that, if they would have advertised something completely different, positive things that take place. For example, think of an ad with a picture of us. Our class will soon begin learning Masechet Shabbat, a new chapter in Masechet Shabbat called Yetziot HaShabbat. Just think of it. I didn't know that they were really listening, but these words entered my students' heart, and I knew nothing about it. But during the summer vacation, they all worked very hard, saved money, and donated from their earnings to create such an ad. They paid someone to do the graphics, they designed it, and they turned the advertising company, agency, and they rented the advertising space for a few weeks on this billboard. This project cost them more than 2,000 shekels. And on the first day, you know, Aleph Elul, I was driving to the yeshiva, and I couldn't believe my eyes, okay? Just like me, thousands of other drivers who pass by Moshav HaZorim every day in the month of Elul, they are very moved when they see this totally different ad. That's interesting. Lo tuchal leitalem. You see an ad, it bothers you, the message there, talk about it. You hear your Rav saying something meaningful, lo tuchal leitalem. Listen to him, do something, and I think that's a really, really nice response. Anyway, these are again the homework to all of us. Lo tuchal leitalem. I must talk again about my life here as a new, I would say, immigrant, new country, new culture, new language. Everything is new. I think lo tuchali talem, from someone who's lost, and sometimes I'm completely lost, I think that is so, so important, okay? I see my neighbors, that's maybe the opportunity, really, the chance to thank them for that. When someone is new, you can update them about everything will be a bracha, really. I thank every neighbor who just texted for just a few short examples. I sent my kids, first day, we prepared 5 different sandwiches. Beautiful, right? What, the first day of school before recess, they will eat a healthy sandwich. They chose what they want in it, cheese, tomatoes, ketchup, all the things. And 5 sandwiches came back home with them. Why? No sandwiches here. You eat a snake before you go to play. So they were saying, why would we like bench and Victoria Diamond eat a sandwich? Nobody's eating a sandwich. People here are eating snakes. There's no way to know it unless somebody tells you. All the neighbors started explaining me, yeah, no sandwiches here, no sandwiches there. So just as a small example, I'm thinking about the new Olah Chadasha that will come to Israel and send her kid with 5 different snacks. And the teacher will say, what's going on? What's wrong with this family? Why is this food so, you know, not healthy? Where's the sandwich? Who will tell her? Buy a sandwich. That's what we do here. Little cultural differences that make the difference. And we really went through, I think, dozens of forms and files and documents this week too with the schools. Baruch Hashem, almost over. You can see the end of this mountain of files and documents, everything. And you like files here. And at the end, I think I had 8 different files to fill just for the kindergarten. And the last one, the 8th one, was so, so touching. After telling them everything about the girl, everything about her and me and all the numbers and all the details and the everything. So the last document, I was like telling my husband, okay, one last file to fill. Starting to fill it, and I see it's a personal letter from the Mora Yehudis, asking us, can you just write her Hebrew name? Because I want to daven and mention the girls in my gun, in my kindergarten, during the year. I think after all these files, just give me her Hebrew name when I mention her in my tefillot. That was so exciting. Lo tuchali talem, don't ignore. You have new kids, think of something creative you can do for the other person. For me, it was really, that was the easiest file to fill, and we're finished, Baruch Hashem. Now let's move to the next obvious mitzvah. As I said, we're talking about things that are basically obvious, trying to see, maybe we can find a deeper meaning in them. So we spoke about bringing back lost items, Hashavat Aveda. But the third mitzvah here is also very, very, not something you will, nothing to write home about. Ma'ake, a guardrail, just a ma'ake, you know what it is. So let's look at a pasuk first. Ki tivne bayit chadash, ve'asita ma'ake legagecha, ve'lo tasim damim beveitecha, ki yipol hanufel mimenu. When you build a new house, and you shall make a guardrail for your roof, so that you shall not cause blood to be spilled in your house, that the one who falls should fall from it, from the roof. Now, it's very interesting. The word ma'ake, you use it in the Bible, in the Torah, and you use it when you speak normal, common, daily Hebrew, ma'ake. I find it very exciting because 200 years ago in France, Rashi was sitting there explaining us what is a ma'ake. And if you're an Israeli kid today, you laugh. You don't need Rashi in order to know what is a ma'akeh. Gader saviv lagag, a guardrail, Rashi says, a fence surrounding the roof. Okay, thank you very much. I need Rashi in a lot of other psukim. But here, ma'akeh, and it's beautiful to see how the ancient word is still so relevant and we use it today. It's interesting because you do see differences sometimes. From, you know, you see the biblical Hebrew and the modern Hebrew, and it's not so easy. We were, during this Shabbat, last Shabbat, we went to Maryland, to Silver Spring, a beautiful shul called KMS. And they were hosting us there. I was like a scholar in residence in KMS, great community. And someone there, we spoke about Hebrew, Ivris, Anglit, language, like differences. And someone told me, you know, there was an Israeli person working here, coming to KMS, And I wanted to meet him after Shachris, after Shacharit, near Liad HaSiach. Outside the shul, they have a beautiful siach, a bush. So I told him, I will meet you after Shacharit, I will meet you near the Sneh. Now, the Sneh, remember the bush that was called the Sneh? Since then, nobody says, I'll meet you near the Sneh. I mean, except Hashem said it to Moshe Rabbeinu. That's it. Nobody's telling anyone, I will meet you way there near the Sneh. So he was like, and this Israeli laughed. So I understand what I learned in Hebrew, you know, in Hebrew lessons in the class. Sneh is a bush. Okay, but don't use it if you go to Israel. Unless Hashem really talks to you near the Sneh. But then come and talk to me about it. Anyway, so ma'akeh you can use. Ma'akeh, the ancient word, is so, so relevant. And again, I want to show you, I think, a very interesting explanation written by Hanatziv. Hanatziv Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. And he says, I see this really fascinating fact. Never thought about it till we met here this week. מי שאין לו מזוזה, רשאי לגור בבית ללא מזוזה. רק שעליו יש מצווה לקבוע מזוזה כשישיג. Let's translate. A person is allowed to live in his house without a mezuzah until he gets one, as long as he will put one up as soon as he can get it. Of course, it's important. Don't do it for a long time. But you can sleep here, there for the first night and take care of the mezuzah tomorrow. But can you sleep in a house without a ma'akeh? Without a guardrail? No, that's an avera. The Netziv says, which is not so with a guardrail that depends on the construction of a house. Since it is forbidden to live in a home without a guardrail, and therefore it is more appropriate to validate his building of a new home with the guardrail mitzvah. Listen to this. מה שאין כן מעקה שתלוי בבניין הבית. That's the essence of בניין הבית. שאסור לגור בבית בלי מעקה, משום כך, therefore, ככה, שייך יותר לחדש ביתו במצוות מעקה. I guess you have חנוכת הבית sometimes, בעזרת השם. And what do? You put a mezuzah? No, I never saw חנוכת הבית with a מעקה, with a guardrail. I never saw people excited, whoa, we have a guardrail, blessing and dancing and doing a party, חנוכת הבית, because they have a guardrail. But it's the Netziv, and it's not the Netziv, it's the Torah. That says that this is a mitzvah. And of course, we can understand from this concept that ma'akeh means basic security rules. It's not important, it's not recommended, it's not the law, it's a mitzvah. And if you don't do it, it's an avera. I never thought of security in such a way. Of course, I try to, it's important, it's nice. But before getting into a car, we need to check oil, water, tire pressure, right? That's ma'akeh. Do not do it. It's not safe. Okay. Do we pay attention, for example, to like that our windows have like a baby-proof bars? Okay. If we rent a cabin, okay, is there a rail around the swimming pool? So important. We heard of these tragedies during the summer. Okay. Do we really look carefully into these aspects in our life, in reality? Is there a lifeguard in the beach, if we go to the beach, okay? It all sounds very boring. What can I do? It's so essential. You can't sleep in a house without a ma'akeh. So it's part of the observance, part of being shomer Torah mitzvot. And first of all, I wanted to end it here because this is so important. And sometimes we hear religious people, they care about other mitzvot. They do not pay attention to the ma'akeh, to the holiness of the ma'akeh. I've never heard of a demonstration saying we need you ma'akeh everywhere in Israel or in the States. I mean, that's also holy. It's part of our holy Torah. But of course, again, once again, the commentators are asking us to look at the deeper, to go a little deeper. Rav Beryl Wein explains, writes beautifully, about how we should all take care and see how can we create new ma'akeh, new ma'akim in plurals, in our new houses. What does it mean, bayit chadash? Yeah? The pasuk says, ki tivne bayit chadash ve'asita ma'akeh legagecha. Bayit chadash, a lot of commentators explain. Reb Nachman of Breslov, as I said, Reb Beryl Wein quotes a lot of commentators. Bayit chadash means every new level, every new step or stage or job or place or like thing that you do. Any new position means bayit chadash. So if you go into a bayit chadash for the first time, you must take care of the ma'akeh. If you go into, for example, a new rank, a higher level in life, you became a professor, a doctor, a high school student, you started college, just like you guys. If you start a new house, meaning new marriage, you just got married, the bride and the groom need to set up a guardrail to establish rules, restrictions in this new relationship. New land, again, I really can identify with this. One of the commentators say, if you moved from one country to the other, and it's really confusing, new culture, new kids, all the parents here, they allow this, they allow this, you want your kid to be cool, part of the society? Ma'akeh chadash, take care. Even if you go to the land of Israel, ma'akeh chadash, ki tivne bayit chadash, ve'asita ma'akeh legagecha. And in the beautiful book, Degel Mechane Ephraim, Rabbi Moshe Chaim Ephraim wrote it. He was the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. And he says, Bayit Chadash, it means a new year. We're all entering a Bayit Chadash in a few days. We all enter a new house. He says, the day is the beginning of your deeds, Yom Tchilat Ma'asecha, Rosh Hashanah. And in every Rosh Hashanah, the world is renewed, and a new house, Bayit Chadash, a new world is constructed for each person in this world, for which you must make a guardrail. You have a new year coming up. What should you take upon yourself? A new restriction, a new Kabbalah Tova, a new decision, a new guardrail, okay? You should choose, but you should take care of building this guardrail if you do not want to fall. It's dangerous to enter a new year without building ourselves a new guardrail, a new ma'akeh. I want to summarize. It wasn't a shiur about Parashat Ki Tetze. These were just three little examples about Parashat Ki Tetze. Before I summarize, I forgot to thank all the great people behind the scenes here. So I just want to thank Benny and Johnny working hard here on this the shidur, on live broadcasting. All the great people in YU, I will not mention all of them, but Michal Hess is really helpful, Harav Yaakov Taubes, Rav Dr. Stu Halperin, of course the president, Rabbi Ari Berman, Stephanie Strauss, World Mizrahi Movement, and of course Karen Danieli. They sponsored this live broadcast, and I thank them all. I want to summarize what we did here, because we talked about only about three subjects out of this huge, fascinating parasha. When you go out to war against your enemies, ki tetze lemilchama al oyvecha, we should know and truly feel where there is a cultural wall here, and Bezrat Hashem, we will triumph it, Bezrat Hashem, but we should be aware that it's going on out there and in here. We should marry to return lost objects, okay, including ourselves and others, each to his or her proper place. And as we said, lo tuchal leitalem. Everything you see becomes something that makes you responsible. Think, why did I see it and what can I do about it? And of course, we should put guardrails, a boundary, a fence, a new rule, a new Kabbalah, a new decision, a new achlata around each new house, new stage, new level we reach, and of course, new year. I want to thank you very much. Next year, I'm in Israel. Elections are coming up. I'm going to be there for the elections. We will meet Be'ezrat Hashem in 2 weeks. Be'ezrat Hashem, thank you very much. Shana Tova. And for all those who asked me, that's the way to get all these contents while I'm in the States, in English and in Hebrew. You have all the information here, so you're more than welcome to follow. Toda Rabah. Have a good day. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.